We recognize that we all struggle with something, but that's okay that we're struggling, at least admit it. We want to get better. We want to improve. We want God to change us from the inside out. But we don't walk around thinking that we have it all together and that we're perfect here. We try to make sure that means that if you're struggling, we want you to come in and God can change your heart from the inside out. And it's a lifelong process. But it's not unusual. Sometimes people have a view of church that everybody's got everything together, their marriages are okay, this is okay, and when something happens, or if they find out that church people did something naughty, they go, see, they're a bunch of hypocrites. But really, 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 really deep down, churches are messy inside, and we're filled with broken people. But the good news is that we found Jesus, and Jesus is trying to help us make it through. And it doesn't mean that we don't stumble and fall, but hopefully we get back up and we keep pushing forward to what he wants us to be and do. That's what church should be like. And that's the kind of environment that we try to create here, a safe place for people to come and kick the tires about what Christianity is about or to grow deeper in their faith. But it can be messy sometimes. That means people can make some really crazy things in their life, and it can be frustrating, and it can be devastating, and it can be exciting, all combined. That's what life is about. And today we're going to be talking about, we've talked about messy sexuality last week. We talked about messy value, messy loyalties. Today we're going to be talking about messy choices. Do you realize that you are today the choices that you made yesterday? We are today the choices that we've made yesterday. For good or bad, our choices dominate our life. They determine which direction we go. And you think back a little bit and you go, man, if I would have made a different choice here, just think of how different it would be today. Or if I made that choice back then, how much better I would have been today. Choices are powerful, but you have the power to choose, and it's important that we make good choices. Zig Ziglar, who's a Christian man, he's passed away, but he was one of the main leading business gurus at one time and motivational speaker. All of his stuff is really, really good. His books are still in print. But he said this, all of life is a series of choices, and what you choose to give life today will determine what life will give you tomorrow. Another motivational book by the Freibergs, it's simply named Boom, but it's filled with wonderful pages of wisdom, and they said this about choices. It says, the difference between ordinary people and extraordinary people is choice. The difference between ordinary people and extraordinary people is choice. It's about the decisions that you need to make. The freedom to choose may be the most powerful attribute and precious resource that we have in life. It shapes who you become, how you express yourself, the success that you achieve or do not achieve, and the influence that you have in the world. In his classic book called Man's Search for Meaning, Holocaust survivor Viktor Frankl, founder of a philosophical movement, Logos Therapy, but he lived, he was in Nazi concentration camps for 3 years of his life. He survived the camp, but his wife did not, and his mother and father did not, and he saw some atrocities that were unbelievable. And he mentions in his book that he observed some terrifying situations, and some of the prisoners either turned into swine or they turned into saints. But he made this quote. He says, man has the potentiality within himself. Which one he actualized depends on decisions, not on conditions. Let me say that again. The difference between a swine, a person that goes in one direction, or a saint is about their decisions. He says it's not the conditions that form you, it's how you choose or how do you respond to those conditions that make you who you are. And you have the power to do that. Nobody can take that away because that choice takes place from within. So decisions or choices are very, very, very important. And they can be good for you, or you can make some bad choices that can be devastating to you as well. So you can imagine then how important it is that we make good choices. And so we're studying this church in Corinth. Corinth is a Roman city that was known for all kind of extreme measures. They didn't have any caste system, so caste meaning that they didn't have the kind of higher class, lower class, because it was a city that was founded by soldiers and by poor people that were sent out of the big cities in that Roman culture in order to populate this city. So everybody was trying to make a name for themselves. And so they would try big, they'd throw big parties, they would throw big games like Olympic games. They would throw out crazy philosophical ideas. They would indulge in sexual activity. They had temples everywhere. It was really kind of an immoral city, and they were known for being that. And so in the middle of this, the church rises up and people started to commit their life to Christ. But it was they're having a very, very hard time trying to deal with what was taking place out there. They had a hard time making good choices. They were falling back into their old way of life. And so they're trying to figure out, they're trying to kind of navigate through how do you live in a world that's totally different than your values. And they were not making good choices. And so I want to look at that day, and I want to look at this idea, this point being that the choices I make determine the kind of life that I live. That's the basing, or the decisions I make determine the kind of life that I live. But how do we make good decisions? In this passage, there's two sections that we're going to be looking at today. And in there, the Apostle Paul, who wrote this letter in response to some of the things that were happening in this church, he gives them some really good practical advice. And he asks them, uses questions to get them to think about some of the things that they were deciding to do. So I want to look at first the decisions or the choices that affect me personally. We're going to look at 1 Corinthians 6. Then we'll look at another passage about decisions that affect other people around us. So let's look at choices that affect me. 1 Corinthians 6, verse 12 through 20. He says, I have the right to do anything. He's quoting a famous or a passage or a phrase that these people would use. So that's why it's in quotations. I have the right to do anything, you say, but not everything is beneficial. I have the right to do anything, another quotation, but I will not be mastered by anything. You say, food for the stomach and stomach for food, and God will destroy them both. The body, however, is not meant for sexual morality, but for the Lord, and the Lord for the body. And by his power, God raised the Lord from the dead, and he will raise us also. Do you not know that your bodies are members of Christ himself? Shall I then take the members of Christ and unite them with a prostitute? Never. Do you not know that he who unites himself with a prostitute is one with her in body? For it is said the two will become one flesh. But whoever is united with the Lord is one with him in spirit. So flee from sexual morality. All the sins a person commits are outside the body, but whoever sins sexually sins against their own body. Do you not know that your bodies are a temple of the Holy Spirit, who is in you, whom you have received from God? You are not your own. You are bought at a price. Therefore, honor God with your bodies. We talked about this passage a lot last week. We're going to take a different angle on it this week. He's reacting to two phrases, the writer here, about that they were kind of quoting and kind of basing their decisions off of. One is, I have the right to do anything, and the second was, food for the stomach and the stomach for food. And apparently some of the men in this Corinthian community were going back to the old systems of worshiping at temples. And when you went to worship at the temple of Aphrodite, you would connect with a prostitute. And they didn't see anything wrong with that, some of these guys, because they believed that their body, you can do whatever you wanted to. That's why he says, I can do whatever I want to my body, and it wouldn't affect me spiritually. That's called dualism. It's a Greek philosophy kind of belief that our bodies are spirit and flesh. The spirit is good and pure and holy. Our bodies are not. In fact, we're encased in them. We're enslaved to our bodies. And they long for the day that we will be released from our bodies and we can go back to paradise once again to be in this spiritual realm. And so some people believe that you could do anything to yourself and it wouldn't harm you. Or there is another group that says they would kind of punish their bodies because they thought it was evil. And so they would do like an ascetic lifestyle. They would fast. They would hit themselves with things in order to punish themselves because of this body they had. So two different expressions that people did. And so Paul's trying to respond to the ones that said, I can do anything to my body and it's not going to affect me. And he goes, no, that's not right. You are vitally connected to your body, your mind, your soul, everything is connected. And so if you do something out here, it's going to affect you on the inside. They would throw out a saying, food for the stomach and stomach for food. It's all going to be destroyed. Basically meaning their stomach has a purpose, and then after that purpose is done, it's going to be destroyed. They kind of thought sex has a purpose. It's just a purpose that's given in life, and then after that, it's done. It's no big deal. And he's going like, no, all these things are big deals. And you're making wrong choices, and it's going to affect you in the long run. So here's something that we can do, and I put together some questions that he kind of uses here, and I've added a little bit to it as well, that will help us make choices as we're dealing with all this stuff on the outside around us. How do we make good decisions that's going to affect me personally? He says in verse 12, the first thing is this, ask yourself, is it beneficial to me in any way? Is it beneficial to me in any way? In verse 12 of chapter 6, he says, I have the right to do everything. You have the right to do anything. But the question you need to ask is it good for you? Right? You can choose to do whatever. But is it actually good for you to do that? Science does it. You know, science comes up with some unbelievable breakthroughs. And I was thinking about cloning. That's really quite remarkable. Just because you can do it, though, doesn't mean that you should do that. Just because you have the power to do something, should you do that? And the same comes true for us. Is it beneficial to us in any way? In Judaism looked at the whole person. Remember in Greek thought, I said they looked at the person two different ways, spiritual and physical, two separated. But when a Jewish person looked at themselves, they looked at it in a holistic way. Everything made up the person. That's when Jesus says you should love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. That means you should love God with absolutely everything that you have. There's no place off limits that you should love God. Everything that you have should love him. And the same is true when we think about this question about, is it going to benefit me in a holistic way? Here's some questions, some follow-up questions to this. Is it beneficial to any of me? First, will it help me spiritually? Is this choice I'm going to be making, is it going to help me grow in the Lord, or is it going to drive me away from the Lord? Is it going to help me spend time with the Lord, maybe in reading his word, like Justin mentioned about some of our cultural shifts that they don't look at the Bible as authoritative in their life any longer? Is that going to keep you, is this choice, is this decision I'm going to make, is it going to drive me away from God, or is it draw me closer to God? Another one is, will it help me emotionally? Will this decision hurt me, my value or my self-worth? It's one of the major things in our life is how we see ourselves. God sees you as lovable and forgivable and capable and all these different things. You are valuable in the eyes of God. But the world can beat us down to make us feel like we're about this tall. And sometimes it's the people around us that make us feel like this, that we're this tall. And I really, really encourage young people, especially if you're in that teens and 20-something in there and you're looking for a mate or a spouse, how important it is that you choose wisely. Because sometimes, especially choose people that build you up and not tear you down. If you're dating someone and they're tearing you down, dump them. Because it's not going to go away. And you might have the hope that they would change. You might have the hope that that they're going to be different. They won't be different unless they get Jesus in their life, and that can change. But be with people that build you up and not tear you down, because that can be devastating to your self-image. And we work with many, many people that have to struggle with that because of what happens in those kinds of relationships. So will it benefit me emotionally? So that can be, is this relationship a benefit to me emotionally? If not, then you need to remove yourself from that relationship. Is this thing causing me too much stress? Because stress can wear you down, and it can beat you up, and it can freak you out. And so maybe you need to make a different decision. Maybe I need to change this. Maybe I need to do this. But you need to make a choice. Will the consequences of my decision result in guilt? Because guilt can, one psychologist said that if I can get people to forgive themselves, we would empty out 90% of our medical hospitals. Or mental hospitals, if it can get them to forgive themselves because of guilt. So guilt can crush your spirit when you've made mistakes in your past. So when I'm making a choice, does it help me spiritually? Does it help me emotionally? Third, will it help me intellectually? Will it stimulate my mind? Or is it just, sometimes we need to kind of put our mind at ease so we can rest a little bit, but don't do that all the time. God's given us these unbelievable organs called brains. Organ, I should say, called the brain. And we need to use them, and specifically as Christians, we need to use them as well. We need to put good stuff in our brains and spend time reading and stimulating and learning, because that stimulates. My grandmother was 93 years old. She was still part of a book club in her 90s. She would go and read a book, and then she would sit with these other ladies, and they would talk about what that book meant. It stimulated her mind. She loved to read. So that's just one example, but a lot of times it's what we put into our mind as well. It's what we, like our self-talk, that goes into our minds. So we got to be careful. Instead of saying, I'm an idiot. Why did I do that? That's dumb. Say, I'm valuable. God says I'm valuable. You got to tell yourself that over and over and over again, because what we tell ourselves is kind of how we live out our life. So we have to be careful intellectually. And then speaking the truth, learning the truth about life and around, that's how we, and all that stuff helps us then make good decisions. Does it benefit me intellectually? And the last thing, letter D, is will it help me physically? I love what one writer writes. He says, the human body is no fluke of the evolution's process. It is God's design and handiwork. It is his masterpiece. It is the ultimate synthesis between function and beauty. Our most advanced technology pales in comparison to the capabilities of the human body. We do have unbelievable bodies. When they're working right, they're unbelievable. When they're working bad, They're unbelievable as well. It's crazy what happens inside our bodies. But they are miracles in and of themselves. And no matter how hard they try, they can't make a robot that can do that. I do this over and over again. One of the most amazing things that I've ever seen is this. Just that. Robots can't do that. They go slow, and you can't turn. I can do that. I got a lot of talent, John. I can do a lot of this. See? I can feel a little speck of grain. I just cut my finger over there. I felt that. That was awesome. On the light switch. Who cuts their finger on a light switch? It's right there. Pretty amazing thing. So we better take care of them. That's my point. God's given us our bodies that we dwell in. We live in them. He's going to redeem our body. When we die, it does decay, but part of the resurrection is we get our bodies back, and they're going to be restored to their perfect form, but we're not going to just be spirits. We are one. Everything is one. And so we need to take care of our bodies. That means we got to be careful about what we put in them. We got to be careful about the foods, the habits, and things so that we don't hurt our bodies, and we want to take care of them, all right? So is it beneficial to me in any way? That's one thing that you asked. The second is this, does it master me? If I make this choice, am I going to be dominated by it in my life? In verse 12, 1 Corinthians 6, he says, I have the right to do anything, but I'm not going to be mastered by anything. I'm not going to be addicted to anything. I'm not going to let that thing dominate my life. It's a little play on words. He says, all things are within my power, but I'm not going to be overpowered by any of those things. So whatever controls your life is your God. Relationships can control your life. That could be your God because that dominates your life, even to the point that God's off to the side because you got to have this person in your life. It could be a habit. It could be a job. It could be a sin. It could be a hobby. But whatever gets in the way, does it master me? So here's some sub-questions to ask of that. First, will it control my thoughts? Is it something that will dominate my thought process? Obsession with people or things or goals or lust or anger or depression, are these things that you're doing causing, are they controlling your thoughts so you can't get over it? I'm just constantly thinking about this over and over and over and over again. Well, that's not very good for you. It's mastering you. It's squashing you down. And we have to learn to kind of change our thoughts so that we don't obsess over them. Second, letter B, will it control my behavior? This thing that I'm going to choose to do, could I become addicted to that? And am I a workaholic? In my anger? Do I get too angry all the time so that it's controlling my behavior? Pornography can do that. Gaming can do that, kiddos. Are you insisting that you got to do that for 8 hours a day? That means it's controlling you. Can you shut it off for a week? If you throw a fit and walk around and throw other things against the wall because you can't game, that means it's controlling you. It's mastering you. And maybe not a benefit to you. The letter C, then, is will it control my priorities? You know, we know that as Christians, we need to be good stewards of our finances. We need to be good stewards of the earth. But we also need to be good stewards of our time. What do we spend our time doing? We have limited time on earth. What are we doing that for? And the Lord says that we are here, put on earth, to usher in the kingdom of God. So all of our time should be focused on how do we put the world back right again, partnering with Jesus. So it's not only pastors that do that, but we're all that do that. Now, you are all located, you're all missionaries in all different spots in the city. Some of you are missionaries at Mayo, some of you at school, some of you in other areas, but you are sent to be God's representative around you, to those around you, and to do whatever you can to help people fall in love with Jesus. That's our job. That's our purpose in life. That's what we should spend our priorities on. Now, it doesn't mean that you can't take vacations. Jesus took time off, too. People were a burden to him, and so he would go off by himself to pray and to take time off, but then he would come back in order to help people again. So if you're doing so many other things and you forget church, then you're making the wrong choices there. It's important that you come on back, and you know, one of the things about churches on Sunday morning is I know that being so busy and stores are open on weekends now, and everybody's crazy. I like Sunday mornings off too, but some of us have to work on Sundays. But what it does is it just says, Lord, I'm going to give you this time today. And it's just one easy step that says, I'm going to commit a little bit of portion of my week to you. And even if it's a couple hours, that's really important. It's very important for kids to learn as well, because they usually copy what mom and dad do. Usually. They can do the opposite too. So will it control my, so does it, is it beneficial to me in any way in all the different aspects of our life? And does this master me? So when you're making a choice, ask yourself, that's how it affects you. Is this decision going to help me? Am I going to be addicted to this? If so, then I need to make a better choice, all right? So that's how it affects me. Let's look at another passage, decisions that affect others around me. This is in 1 Corinthians 10, verse 23, all the way to chapter 11, verse 1. He says again, I have the right to do anything, but not everything is beneficial. He just repeats himself. I have the right to do anything, he says, but not everything is constructive. So no one should seek their own good, but the good of others. Eat anything sold in the meat market without raising questions of conscience, for the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. If an unbeliever invites you to a meal and you want to go and eat whatever is put before you without raising any question of conscience, but if someone says to you, this has been offered in sacrifice, then do not eat it, both for the sake of the one who told you and for the sake of conscience. I'm referring to the other person's conscience, not yours. For why is my freedom being judged by another's conscience? If I take part in a meal with thankfulness, why am I denounced because of something I thank God for? So whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. Do not cause anyone to stumble, whether Jews, Greeks, or the church of God. Even as I try to please everyone in every way. For I am not seeking my own good, but the good of many, so that they may be saved. Follow my example as I follow the example of Jesus, or follow the example of Christ. So he's talking about this idea. We're thinking, like, what in the world is he talking about? Jeff talked a little bit about this a few weeks ago when he brought up. So they would sacrifice animals in their worship services to these pagan temples that would, and some of them then they would have leftover meat, and so they would sell it really cheaply on the street to get rid of it. And so it's very possible that there are some Christians that saw this as a great opportunity, cheap meat. We'd all like cheap meat, right? I'm not going to pay $9.99 for a T-bone steak. I want it down to about $6.99, then I'll look at it. It's funny how corn prices and all that feed price goes down, but meat prices stays up all the time. It doesn't go down very often. So they're looking at it as a cheap way to get meat. Well, some people had a conscience about it. I'm not going to eat that because that was sacrificed at a temple. That could be tainted by temple stuff. And some people said, it's not a big deal. I don't even believe in those gods. It's not going to hurt me. Something like that's not going to bother me. This is cheap meat. And so there was kind of an argument going back and forth. And some people were looking at him and go, you're sinning for doing that. And the other people would say, wait a minute, I have freedom to do this. How dare you condemn me for something that my conscience isn't saying that I shouldn't do. So there's an argument going on, and so Paul's trying to clarify that. And his point is, you do have the right to do some of these things as Christians, but make sure that your decision isn't going to affect the person sitting next to you, or maybe a friend or a family member. Maybe they might have a different conscience, so I want you to think about them first. So maybe you withhold doing this so that you honor what they're, even though you're free to do whatever you want, I want to make sure that you're helping that other person draw closer to me. That's kind of what that means. So as we're making decisions, here's some questions that we need to ask about these things, how it affects other people. First, will it hurt someone else's walk with God? If what I'm going to do, will it hurt someone else? Will they get the wrong impression about it? Are they dealing, really struggling with this? I'm not struggling with this, and I'm okay with this. I don't think this is not sinful, but that person is really struggling. We'll use drinking, for example. That's becoming more and more popular for even followers of Jesus to participate, socializing and drinking in that way. There used to be a lot more strict on that back 30, 40, 50 years ago. Now it's really accepted. But if you can go out and have a beer with someone and not think anything of it, and you're not getting bombed, you're not getting plastered, and so the Bible doesn't really talk a lot about that. However, if you're going with a person that's really struggling with that, you might have the right to do that, but you're going to help that person stumble. Sometimes there's triggers that send people that have addicted behavior, and it sends it off. Even sometimes the smell of it, or even being close to driving by a bar or going to eat sometimes at these, I love Whistlebinky, great food there, but that might even cause some people to stumble a little bit, so you might have to make another choice to go somewhere else. That's the point. You're thinking about that other person. You have the right to do it, but make sure the person that you're with, you're not going to have them stumble. So will it hurt somebody else's walk with God? In verse 24, chapter 10, he says, no one should seek their own good but the good of others. So here's some sub-questions here. First, will it cause a weak Christian to sin? Throughout the centuries, things like dancing and card playing, going to movies, rock and roll music, all these have made the top 10 list of Christians that sometimes can be against, mainly because they're new and they don't know quite what to deal with it. I know growing up, my mom was telling me that I had awesome grandparents, and she really loved her mother-in-law and father-in-law as well. But her mother-in-law scolded her for wearing pants, for wearing slacks. Women wear dresses. They don't wear, men wear pants. And so that was just the norm back in the 60s and 70s. That's when all that changed. And so she was scolded for that. They thought it was improper for that. Well, that's changed a lot, right? I don't know if my wife even owns a dress anymore. No, you don't, do you? I do. No, I don't. That's another issue. No. But anyway, it's silly sometimes what we put up. Paul calls them weak Christians. Isn't that interesting? Those that have to make up other rules to add to the list of things to do. He calls them weak. Instead of enjoying their freedom and being able to kind of move and navigate through, he calls them weak. I just think that's interesting. So, but we need to be careful about that. We don't want them to stumble. So if there's something that maybe it's some people might be R movies. That's changed a lot even in the last 25 years. PG movies are more like R movies that were back then, it seems like. It's just changed. I'm surprised at some of the language with the old PG movies. But anyways, things have changed. So it might be that you're with your friends and they want, you know, you're going to like Saving Private Ryan, which was an R movie. I thought it was a fabulous movie, very violent, but it really changed your perspective of war, especially that first scene when they're storming the beach at Omaha Beach. Unbelievable scenery about what people suffered through and not glorifying it at all. But doesn't mean that you have to see that. I'm just saying that was, I remember sitting there with tears in my eyes as that guy's looking for his arm, crying for his mom. These boys that went and did that. It just gave you a different perspective. Well, that's an R movie. But it doesn't mean that you insist on you're going out with your friends and they say, well, we don't go to R movie. Oh, you got to go to this. It's a great. We're not. You just drop it and say, okay, what should we go? Change something else. Because that hurts their conscience. So it's they're weaker Christians maybe, but will it cause them to sin? And if they go to that movie, that's causing them to sin because that's what they believe is sinful. Even if it's not sinful for you. Does that make sense? So will it cause weak Christians to stumble? Secondly, will it inspire believers to grow in their faith? Will this choice really, you know, challenge believers to step up to the plate and do some things? You know, when we took over this college, it was a big deal for a little church to do, kind of step out in faith like that. We keep hearing from out in the community about how that really inspired other churches to step up and do something big like that for the Lord. So there's churches that I talk with folks and says, that's so cool what you're doing there, and we're coming back to our congregation. We're going to look at something that we can do in our community that's doing that. So that choice that we made inspires believers to grow in their faith. I just recently watched Chariots of Fire again, probably for the fourth time. It's an old movie. It won the Academy Award back in the early, in 1981, I think. And it's about a young man who was a missionary's son that was very, very fast runner back in the 20s and 30s. And he was going to run for Great Britain in the Olympics. He was from Scotland. And he was one of the fastest guys in the world. And when he got to the Olympic Games, they found out that his meet, his race was going to be on Sunday. Well, he refused to work on Sunday. It was really against his conscience. And so he says, I'm not going to run. And the Olympic Committee from Great Britain went crazy. They go, what do you mean? What are these stupid things that you guys believe in? And he says, I'm not going to run. He got kind of frustrated with them. And so there was this dilemma. The world wanted to see him race against some of the fastest people in the world, and he chose not to do that. Well, one of his friends on his track team had won a medal in the hurdles earlier that day, and he had another heat that he was going to run a different kind of race. And he goes, why didn't he race this? This race is going to be on a Tuesday. Could he run in this race? He was going to run the 100. This one was going to be the 400. And the Olympic Committee says, yeah, he can do that. He's not run that before, but he can run that. And so he ended up running that race and winning the gold medal. And so he stuck to his convictions, and he ended up winning that race because he was just, and so it was a beautiful, really inspiring story about sticking up to what you believe in and how God will bless that in the end. So will it inspire believers to grow in their faith? And the third thing is, will it keep non-believers away from God? With my behavior, with my choice, with this, whatever it might be, is it going to be a bad witness to those around me so that it's going to keep other people from following the Lord? Or is it going to have them look down about what Christianity is all about. That's really important. Sometimes it's how we interact, you know, when we get bad business at a restaurant, or how we interact with people that that are annoying, different spots. I was on the phone, frustrated, trying to get things done. But instead of being frustrated, I try to be very joyful. So I told the person, it's not usually the person that you call. It's not their fault that what you need to get done is not getting done. It's the higher ups that made a decision, or so on and so forth. So why bark at them, right? And they're just trying to call them. So one day I was on the phone. I was saying, "Hey, how are you doing? This is thank you so very much. And I just hope you have a great day today." And it's funny how you do that on the other line, that they change their perspective. So I hung up the phone, and my son Jackson was in there. He goes, "Dad, if that lady doesn't have a great day after all that you just said, I would be amazed." Anyways, he noticed that about being positive. Sometimes being jerks to people, and they know that we're Christian, can drive them away from God. We got to be careful. Doesn't mean that you don't stand up. Doesn't mean that you don't confront people. But it's how you do those things that makes a big difference. So be careful how you choose. All right, 1 Corinthians 10, verse 32 and 33. We got to get you out of here. "Do not cause anyone to stumble, whether Jews or Greeks or the church of God, even as I try to please everyone in every way. For I'm not seeking my own good, but the good of many." Why? So that they might be saved. It's about thinking about others around. Your choices influence those around you. They influence your family, your spouse, your friends, your neighbors, whatever it might be. They influence others. So think about them. The last thing that you think about, how's it going to be a benefit to those outside? And then the last thing you ask yourself is this: does it glorify God? Is this something that God could be proud of? So whether you eat or drink, it says in verse 31, and whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. Everything you do should honor God. Your attitudes, your emotions, your finances, everything that you choose to do should honor God. So three sub-questions. Will this decision please God? Will he be pleased with what I decided to do? Secondly, will it honor? Will it bring honor? Will it drive people away? And third, will people see God in my life? Will they recognize God in my life based on how I'm behaving or how I respond? One of my college friends said that when she would go out at night on the weekend, maybe, she would just go out with friends or they go to a movie, right before she would go say goodbye to her parents or family members. And as she was going out her door, she had this funny, funny dad, had a gruff voice, and he would say, "Remember who you are!" Kind of, "Remember who you are!" Meaning, we have a name in our community. Make sure you uphold that name. Live with integrity, because people know who you are, especially in small towns. They know who you are. So he wanted to make sure that she would honor that by her decisions that she would make. And the same goes true for us. We are followers of Jesus. Everything we do, people around us watch us, how we make those decisions. And we either draw people closer to God or we draw people farther away from God. So we have to be careful about what we do. All right, here's the bottom line. The great motivational speaker, Norman Vincent Peale, positive power of positive thinking. He had a lot of good things, a lot of simple things to say, but a lot of good things to say. He says, in the long run, you determine what your life will be by your decisions. Your decisions, little or big, and you never know when a little one is a big one in its consequences, will add up to what you become. You can decide yourself into failure or into success, into mental turmoil or into mental peace, into unhappiness or into happiness. Making choices not only has personal consequences, but eternal consequences. That's why it's so important that we make very good decisions. Paul says in 11, verse 11, follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. Paul's challenge is, do you want to know what it means to live a consistent life? Watch what I do, because I try to do what Jesus did. And so what a great way to kind of evaluate everything we do. What would Jesus do? You know, we used to have those bracelets that came out. People kind of make fun of them. That's a really good thing. What would Jesus do? How would Jesus respond to this situation? How would Jesus treat this person? Who would Jesus hang out with? How would Jesus spend this money? How would Jesus take up his time? What did he do? That's a really good question, because ultimately that's what we become, is to become more and more like Jesus. And if you want to make sure that you're pleasing God, Jesus did it in a beautiful way. The most important choice, though, the most important choice to get to where you need to be is the choice to follow Jesus from the very beginning. And maybe some of you have never made that choice before. You're struggling with some of your choices right now. You're dealing with some of your consequences of your mistakes right now. And you look back and you go, why did I do that? Why did I do that? Well, Jesus gives you an opportunity to start all over again. Doesn't mean that those problems are necessarily going to go away or the consequences will go away, but they'll definitely help you deal with them and it'll help you make better choices in the future to come. Because Jesus wants you to have life to its fullest, but we have to do it his way. And it begins by having him in his life, having him in your life. So if you haven't made that choice yet, that's where it all begins. And from there, he will help you make the choices that can make a difference in your life. In Colossians 3, verse 15, Paul wrote to another church in Colossae, he said this, "The peace that Christ gives is to guide you in the decisions that you make." When Jesus comes into our life, he will help us make those decisions that will be a benefit to you, that will build you up, and that will be a benefit to other people around you, and that will glorify God. That's what it means. So make good choices. They can make a difference in your life. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for this lesson that we find in the Apostle Paul trying to correct some of the bad choices that these people were making in this city of Corinth. And boy, all of us, we can look back at all the number of choices that we made that could have changed our direction in life. Father, forgive us for the wrong choices, and I pray that you help us redo them in our life by making good choices from this point on. We really need your help with that. We need your wisdom, Lord, to kind of work our way through all the craziness of life around us here in our culture. I pray for every person in this room, Lord. Help them know that you love them and that you will forgive them even no matter what they've done in their life, and that you want to have a relationship with them to help them live life the way it was meant to be lived. We're so grateful for your compassion, your love for us, Lord, and it motivates us to honor you and to glorify you with all that we are. And I pray that we can do that. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.